This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Yak! 1, 2, check. Yeah, we back. Hip-hop grew up.
We're back. It's election night.
Yep. A lot of Beto fever.
I call it Bloods versus Crips. It's what Democrats, Republicans.
Democrips and Rebletikins.
Yeah.
Kendrick Lamar.
It's people who are with Trump, people who don't want to be with Trump. They're fighting over key areas. Our home state, Texas, has a big battleground. We got Beto O'Rourke versus Ted Cruz, which is very interesting because it's like split right down the middle. And that hasn't been an issue in Texas in a long time. It's kind of been always like one side of Republican for a long time.
I don't believe the hype. I feel like Cruz is going to win. And they just timed it out and rolled it out in a way that made it like sports.
Yeah.
Kind of like you said, you know, Cowboys and Indians, Cowboys and Redskins, you know. But either way, the NFL wins. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, it is.
Doesn't mean I don't vote. Doesn't mean, you know, I don't pay attention. But my wife pays a lot more attention than I do. But what's observable is people are excited about Beto.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people are evangelizing and saying, hey, 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 it's the movement. Vote. And it's like, you don't have to tell me to vote.
I think that some people do, not maybe you, but they do got to tell people to vote. I mean,
yeah.
Beyonce was rocking the Beto hat.
Yeah, that's dope.
Today, all of the rappers that I used to DJ for were like consistently pushing for him in the city of Houston.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a lot of other artists involved with their, you know, local representatives and senators. So it's cool seeing a lot of activism for the midterm election. You know what I'm saying? Like, they ain't no president run right now, you know? So this is like really big for, like, it's just the midterms people are voting. So I think that's very cool.
It's very significant. And I think we talked about that or texted or something. We communicated about, you know, do rappers need to endorse him or a politician? And the obvious answer is, you know, it's public affairs.
It is.
And the hope for the rappers and Beto and Beyonce and anybody talking politics right now is that they find a way to be useful, you know, in a long-term way. If you're a political person or you have certain needs of people that you want met, it's cool to see that done. So we spend a lot of time in the educational sector, but there's many, many ways that our hip hop generation can contribute to today's generation. And that's hip hop grew up.
It is. Another thing I want to run by you, just looking at the many things we have to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being in the educational realm, we get to hear a lot of young minds' favorite music, right? And I think last week we talked about they like XXXTentacion, they like NBA YoungBoy, they like people who are not only big by their songs, but also big by their social media movements and, you know, are known for doing this crazy thing, or you know, there's like a whole social media celebrity status thing.
Web babies.
Tekashi 6ix9ine
is
like a person who had a big hit like a couple 2 years ago. Oh, with the sticky out,
right?
Sounds like a crazy song, and then keeps just kind of getting into it with other rappers from different areas.
YG lately.
Yeah, YG, but even like Chief Keef, you know, I think someone got shot up in New York because of that. Like there's a lot of things. And I'm not sure like all that's involved, but there's definitely a lot of hype and a lot of things going on. And then he's also got this thing with Trippie Redd where he's like, I think I saw the other day, it was like Trippie Redd's girlfriend, and he's like in there, like inside the like doing an Instagram post or a Snap post, and then he's like they're like laying in bed together, like just like I'm with your girl, like kind of like Biggie Tupac stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you know how it would take like months to put out, like, you know,
a song.
But now they're like just
a picture.
They just get a flight, go over there and like make the post.
Right. Like 50 Rick Ross style. Yeah. I mean, I know the name is relevant. You know, I remember my teens talking about it, you know, last year.
6ix9ine.
Yeah. And then today or this week, we were on page 69. Cause when we look across the eras and differentiate between them.
And your kids went, stay with the sticky.
And I'd be like, we're on page Tekashi, just to have some, just to sound like I know something. Cause we're on page 69. That's where we always go.
Like, ha, mister.
Yeah, I know what that is, kind of, you know.
That is funny. Yeah, silly. If you're not familiar who Tekashi 6ix9ine is, he's the rapper with a tattoo 6ix9ine in Roman numerals. No, not Roman numerals, in Old English. 6ix9ine in Old English on his face, forehead area.
Rainbow hair.
Tekashi 6ix9ine.
That's everything I know about him.
He's Mexican American and he lives in New York, and there's, you know, my kids, a lot of the students I teach and a lot of people who I grew up with, like, they appreciate that he's Mexican American, he's rapping, he's doing things. I still play residency in Houston, and I think one time he went down there, and I don't know, he got into with the Rap Lot folks, they didn't let him in the club or something. But then he's got other big hits too. He's got that song with Nicki Minaj was really big.
He had another one called
BB, which is like a reggaeton song. And that one got a lot of hits, a lot of plays, streams, whatever. So he's successful and still putting out those records.
It's pretty huge.
And next Thursday, apparently, he's playing in Austin.
Around the corner, unincorporated Austin area.
Yeah, right here off Howard Lane.
Mm-hmm.
The old Planet Moon. I wonder if it's going to happen.
Club Moon. College parties.
Tickets were $80 online for
Latin
that.
Parties.
$80 a person.
$80 at Club Moon. What's
a person?
What's the new name?
Agave.
$80 to see Tekashi at 6ix9ine. Agave.
I want to see how many followers he has.
Right around the corner. And that's possible, you know, that the old spot is a new spot, because hip hop grew up. We've been here a while. Yeah, man. So I've heard, you know, the Fifi got the Kiki, and I've heard some other songs lately that I've enjoyed, man, and I'm not supposed to. I jump around XM, and a lot of times when I hear, you know, what feels like the same old same, or like just the wave for the sake of the wave, because I, you know, I'm not catching it from a relevant angle or whatever. Mm-hmm. I skip around, and sometimes something catches me. This song, No Stylish, you heard that one?
No Stylish. Drake,
that one caught me. Yeah,
that caught me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I like No Stylish. He's dissing Drake in that song, right?
Who?
Drake is dissing Kanye in that song, right?
Is he? I didn't get into it like that. I just thought it was grooving. I don't know what he was talking about.
For someone who's always paying attention to the lyrics, I'm surprised you didn't catch that. I didn't catch it either. I'm saying I saw an article about it, and so
I think
it must have slid by both of us.
It's real beat and hook dominant, so. Until I purchase it or listen to it often and not just enjoy it in passing, casually, I won't even hear the words like that.
Man, I'm glad you brought that.
It's in the car.
Beat and hook dominant, because I remember we're walking down the hallway and I think Robinson brought up something like, yeah, man, it's like the beats are great, but the words don't matter anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of that's the whole thing with rap now. The beats are amazing. The production's amazing, you know? There's some.
That's always been the appeal, though.
There's some parts of that Travis Scott. I don't know what he's saying, but it sounds good as heck, right?
Right.
You know, and it's just like
that's always been. I mean, there's a clear 1, 2, 3. First, you hear the beats, and then you hear the voice and flow of the lead track, and then you get into the lyrics, and that's just completely natural. Only way you get in the lyrics first if the beat's not that banging, you know?
Yeah.
And that can be a good thing, but that's not really how it goes most of the time. Those are like specialty songs compared to when the beat is supposed to be, ooh, you know. And sometimes you have both. Ice Cube had both. Public Enemy had both. You know, that's the whole country off one production team. But, you know, there's a lot of versions. And right now, yeah, the sound. There's a sound. There's a vibration. That's obvious. That's just how music rolls in waves. And it's not supposed to be something that we just fully see eye to eye with, because we are the hip hop generation. And just like our parents before us, some things we listen to, they don't fully get. Cause now hip hop grew up 40-something years later, mm-hmm. there's a generation that can be talking about what the younger kids listen to in the hip-hop realm for the first time ever.
Mm-hmm. With English not being my first language,
mm-hmm. a lot of the stuff I liked and listened to, I didn't understand what they meant. I understood those colloquialisms because I lived on the border and I don't know what they're talking about because it's like three black guys in my whole town. So there's no way.
Jamming. Interesting.
I was like, that's jam. Oh, okay, cool. So, and then like, you know, going to college, going to other big cities, getting to know people who wouldn't understand what this meant, mm-hmm. obviously helped me understand what this meant. And then, it was always Beat and Hook dominated for, you know, most of my childhood.
I think music generally is.
Yes. I think the lyrics are complementary.
Yeah, it's a solo. It's a one more track or however many vocal tracks they use. But it's not the whole sound by any means.
I know. Which
just doesn't work like that.
You know, and then a couple really good things on Netflix, documentaries, that Quincy Jones one. I just
loved it in
hip hop evolution. But
how do you watch content like that all at once?
What do you mean? Me?
At night, in the morning? Yeah. What's your routine for watching like something on Netflix, or do you have it on TV?
Well, those are like 1 hour. I guess the hip hop evolution is like 9 different episodes.
Oh, those?
Right?
Yeah, more than that.
Broke down into 1 hour.
Shout out to Matt Sanzala on there.
Yes, and a bunch of our buddies on there.
Mm-hmm. Second season.
And then also the Quincy was only what, an hour, an hour and a half?
It felt like a couple hours, but it was deep.
It was so deep. It felt like a little bit longer than an hour for sure, like 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I was familiar with some of the content, but you know, that was a great story. I know his daughter was responsible for a lot of that content.
I didn't know that he was buddy buddies with Ray Charles was his homie.
You seen the movie?
And Quincy's in it?
Yeah.
I was in the movie. Oh, okay.
Yeah, young trumpet player new to Seattle.
Man.
He's a recurring character because he's Quincy Jones and it's a Ray Charles movie. Yeah. He's the guy.
Man. So that was like the first dude like kind of pretty much, they make the beats. Or let me kind of help write the songs. Let me help.
He was not a producer like, let me make the beats.
It but like,
more, let me make the sound.
Let me make it.
Let me produce the sound.
Let me compose.
That main component we've been talking about.
The composer.
The beats and hooks. Yeah. The composer.
He's like, let me take care of this part.
Yeah. Let me.
Frank Sinatra. Let me take care of this part.
Let me direct.
Jackson.
Like, the world. Yeah. Come here, we are the world. Let's do that real quick. Let's do some jazz. I grew up doing jazz. Just boom, 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 with just everything. I remember listening Back on the Block with my dad. It was serious. Because that was the bridge between the hip-hop generation and that generation before us.
Baby boomers.
You know, that they tie, you know, to civil rights, you know, or soul and jazz and gospel and, you know, just, yeah. Baby boomers, is that what you call them? My dad's
boomers,
65.
I think your dad would... Was he born in 49 or after World War II?
No, he wasn't born in 65. What am I talking about? He was born in 53. But he's 65 years old. I got lost.
So he, right after World War II, that would be a baby boomer.
Okay, there you go. Mm-hmm.
So connects baby boomers to the hip hop generation.
The civil rights generation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Back on the Block was connecting those worlds with the sound.
Yes.
Quincy Jones. That movie, what'd you like about it?
I like that I teach history. I like history. I like that he covered like almost every era of American history.
Right.
Like how he said his grandmother was a former slave.
Mm-hmm.
Who can say that right now?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's he grew up with in Chicago and just they eat like the poorest of the poor.
Mm-hmm.
And then how wide of range of time he covered and how wide of range of society he covered.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's able to go from the poorest of the poor to Paul McCartney, Jack, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like think of that range.
Yeah.
That not too many people get to do that, man. So like, that's what I was just like appalled. Like, and then he used to play in Vegas when it was like totally mob control. And so the black people had to stay in a certain part of town and Frank Sinatra had to like change it up. Like, Imagine
right.
that era. But you're making music for the world. You know what I'm saying?
Like Duke Ellington being wealthy during the Great Depression.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Duke is like the bad boy before Quincy, before Stevie, you know? He was wealthy during the Great Depression. Several entertainers were, obviously, but that's cool.
I think all
Quincy's of the, like yeah. weatherproof like that. Sorry.
According to Great Gatsby, that's who, you know, kept the checks coming in, the parties, right? So if you're entertainment, I think.
Exactly.
In any time, if you're in entertainment, if you're good at what you do, you're going to be getting paid. Mm-hmm. Even as the apocalypse, probably.
Mm-hmm.
They all need someone entertained.
If you're ready to rock it.
Anyway, what's next up here?
I'm doing some performances in January, man.
Where are you performing?
A Sunday Bobby afternoon Blakes. At the Belmont doing Brave Fest, MLK weekend.
Okay.
And then that Monday after the march, performing at Houston Tillotson, man, trying to put together something special, working on some new stuff around the MLK day.
Okay.
And probably bringing through a high school choir near you to do some work with me, too.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Babu Blaze got projects all day. You can catch me DJing locally, Houston. We still got our monthly at Barbarella on Fridays. And then I got my resident after hours in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
November 17th, Travis Scott after party. That'll be fun for me.
That's big.
It's big. We do stuff big. Next thing, what big in Tennessee, 8-Ball named JG, are inducted into what Hall of Fame?
Memphis Music Hall of Fame.
Okay.
I was on the ballot for the Austin Music Hall of Fame last year. I told my kids, I'll be in the Austin Music Hall of Fame possibly with Willie Nelson. And they're like, who's Willie Nelson? But Memphis Hall of Fame, 8-Ball MJG, you know, obviously on the Mount Rushmore of Southern hip hop, where it just crushed everything in the 90s through the Ghetto Boys, 8-Ball MJG, UGK.
Tony Draper.
And Outkast. Yeah. And just...
Swab House.
It's over. And 3-6, 666 back then. Swab Hypnotized House, right. Mind. But that sound, you know, you have Big Crit and you have it's the guitar, entire music industry
it's,
now.
It's guitars and 808s.
Yeah.
And it's more than that, too. And bass mm-hmm. and it's a lot of soul. Yeah, it
is. A lot of soul. And a lot of hip hop over and over again in just the most luscious way. So 8-Ball and MJG are also doing a film. Apparently, there's a motion picture being produced about them.
That's gonna be awesome because their story, like just the first album coming out hard, or you know, I'm pretty sure that song before that coming out hard was just so awesome. I would love to see 8-Ball and MJG movie.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting because they came out hard, and I, you know, that's silly to say, but what I mean is Memphis, you know, really being of the soil in Memphis, Tennessee. Is going to be at least as interesting as watching Hustle and Flow.
If people who understand, oh, what's Memphis rap? Memphis rap is what all these people are pretty much singing right now. Mm-hmm. The repetitive, like, all mm-hmm. this is 3-6 Mafia. Mm-hmm. All this is real repetitive rap with 808 drum sounds. And they always use like bells and kind of like high pitched, like little like melodies in the beats.
It's blues, okay. funk, soul, gospel. It represents that baby boomer progression, that baby boomer collection. It's kind of back on the block as well.
Yeah.
Those pillars of Southern rap are the people who put that soul and that whole kind of black gumbo thing into the
with a drum game. With a drum machine forever. With the hi-hats really fast. That mm-hmm.
sound.
Style just crazy awesome.
Sound.
A way of making drums that was impossible before. Mm-hmm. That they really expressed in the mid- to late 90s.
Yeah.
That you heard in a bunch of those records, 8-Ball MJG, 3-6 Mafia. Mm-hmm. You know, and then even I remember
Outkast.
Going. Yeah. And then I remember even like Yo Gotti being like an up and coming rapper. I went down there like 14 years ago and he was just kind of like this little dude. And now Yo Gotti's really big. Mm-hmm. And then you hear, you know, what Juicy J does and the stuff he says in other records like so much.
Right.
Cardi B and all this stuff. It's that Memphis.
Juicy J's got a hip hop grow up thing going on because he had like a top record with Katy Perry at one point. Remember?
Yes. Juicy J
at like 99 years old, well, you know, sarcastically.
No. And the thing about him, he teamed up with Wiz Khalifa to get all that hype. Khalifa was really big and then tried to, hey, let's do this game. Can that sign me to this thing? And then that was a great little collaboration.
Right. Let me borrow your logo. Mm-hmm.
But for both our benefit, one,
right,
to, you know, solidify your label a little bit more and blah, blah, blah. And it was cool for him to, like, use that as a springboard to all these young folks. It's kind of like the old folks touching back to the young. It's kind of like when Titty Boy went to 2 Chainz.
Mm-hmm.
Smart idea, because no one even remembers Titty Boy.
Right. Right. You know?
So it was, I think that's really cool. Another thing I think is cool, there are talks of a South Park Mexican film movie getting made. South Park Mexican, the Hispanic rapper from Houston who had many hits, who's currently incarcerated for doing inappropriate things with young girls, apparently. With this, it's considered a big many people think that there's like a conspiracy. People are just trying to like figure out ways to lock them up. Other people said that, you know, there's, because of the amount of people that it has to be true. I've heard both sides of the story. Like, I think it's something that needs to be resolved. I'd love to see a documentary before the film, or a film, or if they do a film, I'd love to see a documentary on that. Because to me, I think that's very interesting. It's like, man, this dude did get framed. Like, you know, I know Matt Sinzala had done some interviews too, and they're like, well, it's great. Let's bring this to light. You know, you know, I see documentaries all the time, right? Like on Netflix, I see on Hulu, like people uncovering these crazy things. I'm just like, this would be a great topic to uncover. What are your thoughts?
I think there'd be a lot of attraction to some documentary style coverage of SPM. Mr. Coy, is that his name?
Yes, Carlos Coy.
His story. He's a legend. I think it would be, you know, popular. I think it would be interesting. And so I get it. I think it makes sense. South Park Mexican definitely is a legend, which speaks to his legacy, you know. And I think it would be interesting to see, you know, him kind of put in that academic or official, you know, just that whole film, radio, television, film type of light. It's like there's a bit of permanence to that kind of detail going into a document of someone's actual life experience. And it would be cool to get more truth and more primary and secondary sources on his story.
Correct.
Yeah. So we keep swinging back to the Latin rap, man.
We do. We do. So I guess it's
no, it's good, because I remember something else, you know, that you thought about earlier, which was the use of certain language across certain classifications of people groups, the way we describe them.
Yes.
You remember you brought that up?
Classifying people groups a little bit. Was it on the last conversation?
Yeah, it was like the N-word and.
Yes.
Yeah.
So back to Tekashi 6ix9ine, the Mexican rapper, he uses the N-word a lot. Like, you know what I'm saying? What is that okay? You know, you being an African American, how do you feel, you know, when, you know, if a Mexican dude says N-word?
Well, in 2018, what gives me ownership of that word? It's been pushed into just pop culture vernacular a long time ago. But just for theory, I want you to think of 2 or maybe 3 things that could classify you as a person to lay claim to that word. So what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Like, who definitely has a right? Is it African-American? That's what you said first, right? So if you're African-American, right? Like, where does science and history believe that humanity evolved? And doesn't that make everybody African-American?
You're saying because scientists have figured out that, you know, we're all from, technically from, our DNA links back to one person in Ethiopia and Africa. So we're technically all African.
Or some people, in theory.
Yes.
So there's that way to think about things. But there's also the reality of.
So we're all the N-word.
Well, if being African-American gives you, you know, a reservation, a right, ownership to it, right?
Yes.
And so then another way, let's say, okay, we're looking across African-American. And we're comparing it to Mexican-American, right?
Yes.
So then what are we talking about? We're talking about race? Is that what that line? In other words, what is the line between who might or might not be able to say it. Like, what is the classification that makes it a question? And for any type of classification, there's a different way to look at that same question. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Because, see, the being African-American is kind of one way to look at that N-word thing. And can Mexican Latin rappers say it, right?
Yeah.
But why wouldn't a Mexican be able to say it? Or what other type, you know, what other way is there to look at it?
Well, I'm Mexican-American. And I probably have a different answer. I don't say it because it makes people upset. And so I don't want to make people upset.
Out of respect.
Yeah. It's period. Just like I wouldn't call a white guy a redneck. Just like I wouldn't call, you know, another derogatory term to an Asian or, you know, like even I just said it, right? Like that's a derogatory term to some people. So I don't want to be disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't say it.
Right. And I really don't either.
Now, if I'm like repeating a story or telling something or like retelling you some rap lyrics that this guy dissed someone else on, I'll try to like say it because I'm repeating what they said, but I'm not putting anyone down.
Right, right, right.
I think Tekashi 6ix9ine saying it, it feels comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
The people in his videos are obviously African-American.
Right.
Don't seem to be bothered by it, you know.
So the difference between the African-American and Mexican-American is whether the Mexican-American saying it offends, right? That's what it really comes down to.
In my experience.
Okay. So if not African-American because of this, you know, old theory of origin of humanity or species or whatever, right? Because we don't really know, right? But that's the claim. But what about Mexican-Americans' right to claim themselves as African-American? Specifically Mexican-Americans, right? Mm-hmm. There's Native, there's African, there's European, all those, you know, people groups are present, even though those things aren't really exclusive across those lines, because Native is pretty nonspecific depending on the tribe, and African-American is a huge continent, right?
Yeah.
And then there's so many definitions, like normally in North America, Black means you have any amount of African-American, any amount of traceable, right?
Yes.
So, but there's a huge difference between Black and Mexican American because there's plenty of Black Mexican Americans. In fact, my boy that I make records with, Marco Mexstep from Third Root, he studies, he's a PhD, and his expertise of study is Black and brown cultural and historical overlap. And he says Africa and Mexico are blood related. There's nothing you can do about it. He showed me where a Harvard professor, Henry Louis Gates, did an expose online. It's not even expose. He's Henry Louis Gates. Mm-hmm. He did a story on, like, I don't know, National Geographic or some station. And he shows that way. He said African Americans or Africa is like the grandmother in the closet of Mexico. He said, even if you act like the Olmecs might not have been African, just looking at Mexico's history, even if you just act like Black people were invented in American slavery, he said Mexico and Peru had way more African slaves or African enslaved people than USA ever did. So he said, and those people didn't disappear. And when Vicente Guerrero, the Afro mestizo guy they called El Negro, second president of Mexico, came in, they took race. They stopped classifying people in racial ways and then abolished slavery. Right.
Yes.
So there's no way for you to say who's Black and who's not when you got a place that's full of, you know, these different groups in large numbers at the time.
Yeah. I think Brazil had,
of course,
more than anyone. Like by 4 or 5 times or something like that.
Portugal going hard.
Exactly. And
with port in their name.
Exactly. And then you, and then a lot of people, like, you know, you go to Brazil and you see the mix of everyone. You're like, all right.
Of course.
Definitely.
Because everyone is a mix. You know, you're just looking different. I don't think there's that many like, oh, I'm all there ever was in the land where I lived. That exists. But, you know, colonization wrecks that Native concept. They're just at
and
odds.
Airports and Tinder and social media. Yeah, just, like all just, that's kind of going away. Yeah.
Yeah. Just cultural humanity just wrecks nature at this point. It's an argument, big argument. But outside of that, how could a Mexican American, if African American is the way that you can claim nigga, then how does a Mexican American necessarily prove that he doesn't pass that North American standard of one drop, which is crazy because there's no Black blood. But you see what I'm saying? Yeah. If one drop is the rule in the USA and we're talking about Mexican American, then the average Mexican American is African American enough to make that claim anyway. I'm not saying they should say it because it is silly and offensive, but I'm saying which lens are we looking through? You feel me?
I feel you.
Yeah, yeah. And we can analyze that now because hip hop grew up. And there's always been Mexicans and Latins who feel comfortable saying it. Big pun, Fat Joe, boom, boom, boom. And Fat Joe, I saw on Drink Champs, and he was like, yeah, I mean, yeah, I claim Afro-Latino or Afro-Mestizo or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. He just did. He was like, there's no way you would know. He's like, we're talking about Puerto Rico.
There's definitely
about Puerto Rico.
A big African influence right. in Puerto Rico.
And that's another absurdity is that people say, I'm not black, I'm Puerto Rican. I'm not black, I'm a Colombian. I'm not black. What's Pele then? Like, what about the really overt? What's major
from right? African but
is
descent,
right? Yeah. Is he black or not? He's whatever Vicente Guerrero was to where history can't take the blackness away.
Yes. You know,
it's Pele. But what is blackness? What is Roberto Clemente? What is he? What is he compared to Jackie Robinson or Pele? You know what I'm saying? So we're making up stuff. You feel me? Mm-hmm. I'm not black. I'm Dominican. What? One's a country and one's a color. That's made up when, you know, the whole slave trade pops off because we need categories to function.
Yes, category. Like, I remember
they're good for business Obama and was legend.
Obama was running and some people were like, well, he's not like black, like, from, you know, like from the South black, or he's not black, like from us. And people were like,
whoa. Right. You're describing black in a way that's not racial or genetic or anything. It's now like what you think of black. And black necessarily in this system. Of what English and European colonization through huge, brutal, like unprecedented types of enslavement to develop the place and, you know, progresses from there with this particular, you know, nigga, right? Mm-hmm. Over time, it just seems like now it's always meant. I read in this book called Racecraft. It talks about how ultimately, you know, some of the biggest researchers, I can't remember who they were, but maybe somebody like Du Bois and somebody like, I can't remember who other person is. But anyway, one of them said black socioculturally means a farmer with no land.
Okay.
Someone who rides the Jim Crow. Like, in other words, you are classified because race, more so than it's scientific, because it's not mostly at all, except to the eye and stuff like that. But race doesn't check out. It just doesn't check out. It just does. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And then race is also invented during colonization, 1600s, 1700s,
right.
To classify different places are colonizing.
But the way that it permanently makes sense mm-hmm. socioculturally mm-hmm. is a race, meaning people being placed in order based on where they're classified and what team or what jersey that they allegedly wear. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's definitely a social order to go with those classifications. We're at work and we have to look at test data broken down by race. Mm-hmm. And if you put white or anything else, no matter who you are, it goes in and it's totally up to the parent when they fill out a form. I have plenty of black, white or Mexican white students and vice versa and all across all kinds of like what? You know, two or more races, 4%. Why are we? What does why? Just so we think about it. What
is that? Alaskan or Native American?
Are we doing that to know whether or not we're giving great service to the Alaskan or Native American? Is that why we're breaking that down to make sure we can close the gap for our Alaskan and Native American students?
I think it gets bigger than that.
I think it's some old chicken or the egg type. You know, like what is this about? Why is it here? See what I'm saying? It's just an embedded belief system now. He's not black like such and such black. He's like such and such black. And I get it. You know what I'm saying? But that's just the game. It's not the truth. It's too much. You feel me? So I don't know who can claim the N-word, but I know that it's real cool for social studies teachers in the hip-hop generation doing a podcast to talk about such a thing with such flair and naturally.
Yeah.
Hip-hop grew up.
Hip-hop. He's growing up.
Watch the grown. It's grown.
There's a lot of weird things that you have to. There's a lot of weird things that you can bring up teaching history. I brought up a World Star video today in class. What was going on?
Which World Star video?
Well, we're talking about Bill of Rights, right? And so making kids memorize 1 through 10. And
CNN's looking like World Star right now. Wolf Blitzer.
Wolf Blitzer saying the Democrats take control of the U.S. House.
Okay. So the Bill of Rights, I know.
So anyway, back to the Bill of Rights. Bill of Rights shield you from mistreatment of the government, right? It's they protect personal rights. A lot of the states, when they were doing this voting during on this constitution during the Constitutional Convention, 1780s, 1790s, a lot of people were like, "Yo, I'm not going to approve this unless these 10 rights are in there." So states started saying, "And hey, we should have this. We should have these." So they have these rights.
Mm-hmm. This is the story.
Mm-hmm. One of them is number 4, right? So what I do is I have kids put up number 4, like 1, 2, 3, 4, like your thumb tucked in. And then what you do with that 4 is like, all right, this is 4. And then how you remember is you kind of like do it like a salute with that number 4. You kind of act like you're a police officer, kind of like looking in, looking in the trunk, look at what's in there, you know.
And explore.
And then I explain it. It's like, all right, this protects you. This number 4 right here, this thing on your head. You know, this should remind you that police, that this protects you from police illegally search and seizing your things. You know, so that's, you know, I'm in number 4. And they're like, really? You go, yeah. And then I show this video. And on World Star, it's a video of this guy in his house, and he's filming two sheriffs, like, digging through his things. And he just, like, keeps saying, he's like, you didn't, where's the warrant? You need to get out of my house. Like, kind of just like, excuse me, sir, you don't have a warrant. Like, you need to leave. Like, it's like, and then you kind of hear the mom, they're like, oh, rah, 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 like, kind of, they're like, no. And then it takes him about 4 minutes, but then he's like, kind of just, you're on camera. There's cameras all over my house. Like, you are in here, and he's, like, an African-American guy. He's, like, telling these, like, two, you know, Anglo-Saxon police officers, like, the
Anglo,
get out of my house, you know, please leave. And he's being polite. He's not cut, you know.
How do you know they're Anglo-Saxon just by looking at them? Isn't that a real specifically small
place of origin? They looked of European descent. You're right. They could have been
social studies teacher questions.
You're absolutely right. I was, you're right.
This is social studies teacher talk out of nowhere with DJ Rabbit Rick.
And so he's like, he's just asking him, get out of my house. Where's the warrant? You don't have no warrant? All right, bye. See you later. And so they leave.
Right.
And then
in about 4 minutes.
And explains to us, all right, so what right was he exercising? What right did he have to remind them to obey? They said the 4th Amendment. There you go. So
that's dope.
Bringing that world so hard. Yeah. It's cool getting to see that real life. Yeah.
But do they write it down so they remember it?
It was already written down. They just referenced
the World Star part?
The World Star part was not written down.
That's where they write hashtag World Star by the
World
information.
Star.
You know what I'm saying?
World Star. People going to remember.
And be like, what other hashtags go with that video? And they just kind of mark
people,
it.
The kids in 8th grade love number 4. Search and seizure. Yeah, but what if they search and
this? It's not fair.
I go, well, did you give them a reason to search? Like, what do you mean? Like, if the car reeks like weed, they can search you without a warrant because you gave them a reason. Yeah, but some people, you know, some laws, they make up reasons to search, you know?
Right.
But I do love and respect the police officers who abide by the law, abide by the Constitution. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, that's very helpful.
They're just like, hey, what's up? Okay, thank you. Just making sure you're not going to hurt or kill or rob anyone.
Right.
You know, go about your day. Love police officers. I like that.
Thank you, officers, who are not messing over the people.
Yeah, man. Shout out to all the good people out there.
Mm-hmm. The Democrats, I said Demon. The Democrats take control of U.S. House. That's the projection.
Republicans.
With Van Jones.
Keep control of the U.S. Senate. That's not.
What's his name in the middle? Real popular guy.
Oh,
they got them all out.
You're talking about.
The white hair dude. I don't know why I don't remember his name right now.
Cooper.
Anderson Cooper.
Anderson Cooper is an OG newscaster, because I remember, do you remember that one news show, Channel One? Did your high school participate in that?
I don't think so.
So our high school probably got a grant for some free TVs or something, and we used to watch Channel One. Channel One was like a news it was like news, like student news, and it would be like 10 or 15 minutes every day. And it had like a bunch of like different like its own cast team. One of them was like Lisa Lin was on it. Lisa Lin's like was on The View. You know what I'm talking about?
Lisa Lin.
Lisa Lin. And then there's Raleigh Valverde. There's a couple other people and on that, you know, as are the newscasters who would talk about shows and break it down to like a student explain, you know, news. Kind of like CNN 10.
Studies
you know?
Weekly.
Yes, exactly. TV. But TV version. Anderson Cooper was like the main dude.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I remember during the war in Kosovo in 94, like he was like in there, like he was in a hotel getting bombed and stuff in the Kosovo thing. Like,
oh, yeah. I remember seeing that. But you're saying he was on TV when he was young?
And he funded that by himself.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a, somehow he's like the grandson or great grandson of, what's that robber baron dude?
Wow.
One of the dudes who the railroad of the oil guys. He's like what? It's not J.P. Morgan, but what's the other guy? No, I'm talking about.
Nope, don't recall. Can't catch them all.
He's related to a very affluent family from New York City who's had lots of money.
J.P. Morgan or somebody?
Not J.P. Morgan, but the other
Price Waterhouse. Looking boy.
Something like that. Yeah. Anyway, it'll come to me later. But anyway, I think he has with that, he was able to fund himself going to a bunch of those places. And now you see him on CNN, you know, telling the news. And they're all out there. You're right. They're all the news people are talking about this election. And
one dude looks like he's running for office with the red tie on.
The cool thing about this election, man, is that it's a midterm election and they had a lot of turnout. It said like the biggest turnout for a midterm since like 1960. So this is like a 50-year historic reach of people voting.
Yeah, people are, you know, talking more on social media, using the internet to get information out. You know, real divided.
It's pretty divided, but
just on you but know, the thing just is, Trump type stuff.
When you have Bloods and Crips, it's going to be divided, right? When you have red and blue and this and that, like it's just like a black and white issue. It's like there's other colors.
Right.
We should have a yellow party and a green party. We should have other people like kind of having choices. And it shouldn't just be that divided.
Right. It's a paradigm.
Like when I go to like McDonald's, I don't get like two options.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we go to Netflix, we don't get, you know.
Right.
You don't get comedy and action. No, there's other feelings in there.
It's that blockbuster.
Yeah, man, you get a lot of options. So I wish we had other options. Or you know what? I wish it was like George Washington wanted. Hmm. No political parties.
Hmm.
Just vote on people and their judgment of their character.
Hmm.
That'd be kind of cool too.
George Washington.
But that'd be radical, right? If I was saying that. No political parties. Like, man, just vote on people because of what they've done in the past. That would be cool. I'm running out of things to talk about. I think we should wrap up this show of Hip Hop Grew Up.
Another thing. We were talking about Latin rappers, N-word, yes. Politics, hip hop. So here's the thing. Where are Mexican Americans in the census? The U.S. Census.
What do you mean? Where are they? Like how they classify?
Well, yes, because check this out. On the one hand, they say Hispanics, which is another classification. Real new school language, but they'll be the largest people group in Texas by 2022. But look at census statistics of the country and the state of Texas and the United States. And it's listed as 70% white because there's not a category for Mexican Americans. There's not a category. They have the white non-Hispanic. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But there is no representation of the people we call brown.
Yeah.
In the census to this day, right? You seen it?
What they do is there's like a subcategory under the W section that says, are you H? Hispanic.
And I wonder if
it's. So I think it's like.
On the level like that. What do you
think? If it was a Google form, it's definitely a column in the spreadsheet that comes out in the back end. So, I think they definitely classify it. I see the, how they could use it to one's advantage, though. I know when I get a speeding ticket, it says race W, right?
Right.
And I'm pretty sure there's a spot for H now.
Right.
And there either.
I don't think so. I'm going to look up the U.S. Census. Because I've looked at quite a few of them, but I've never seen that. There's like a few different ways that people get categorized, right? Let me see what they got. I just wonder if it's legit sometimes. But data on the Census Bureau. American Fact Finder, Quick Facts.
I went to census.gov. And
yeah, that's where I'm at.
About U.S. Census Bureau must adhere to the 1997 Office of Management and Budget Standards on Race and Ethnicity, which guide the Census Bureau in classifying written responses to the question, to the race question. White, a person having origins in any of the original peoples of Europe, Middle East, or North Africa. That's definitely a Mexican-American. Black or African, a person
Hold on. Middle East or North Africa is all white.
Middle East and North Africa is all white.
And so that means Saddam Hussein is white.
Yeah. And then the
Come on, dog. What is that?
That is not the U.S. Census Bureau, 1997, Office of Management and Budget Standards.
Miss Muhammad's white, right?
Miss Muhammad.
She's from Egypt.
Yes. She's North Africa, so according to this, yes, she's white. Okay, black, a person having origins in any of the black racial groups of Africa.
Black racial groups of Africa. You can't be black racial groups of the rest of the world.
So black racial groups of Africa, but there's black racial groups of people in North Africa. So that kind of like contradicts the first one in a way, right? But so are they just saying, they definitely have the word black in there, so are they saying the color of your skin?
And if all those people are white, then why? Let me ask you this. What percentage of the world is white?
Okay, here's the third category.
Because it won't be based on U.S. Census data.
Here's the one that kind of like, it makes me question it. It kind of boils my blood a little bit. It says, a person, this is another
Glad I asked.
American Indian or Alaska Native. This one says, a person having origins in any of the original peoples of North and South America, including Central America. So it's all about those Native peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And who maintains tribal affiliation or community attachment.
Right. So you don't count saying, even if you're observably.
So the 1% of tribes that didn't get wiped out by Europe, if you're still affiliated to them.
You're still pure and on the reservation.
But according,
is that what that's about?
Yeah. But according to like the DNA you take from Ancestry.com or 23, you know what I mean? 23. According to all that, it says you're Native.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There isn't going to be a tribe that I'm from, because they're all wiped out.
Right.
All right. Next
and not
one.
Even wiped out, just Asian, blended like category. Everybody else.
Asian, a person having origins in any of the original peoples of Far East, Southeast, or the Indian subcontinent. For example, Cambodia, China, India, Japan, Korea, Malaysia, Pakistan, the Philippine Islands, Thailand, and Vietnam.
Russia?
Far East? Russian? But then Russian would be.
Does it say Russian?
Russia, if you're talking about.
Are they
like,
white?
Russia is so big that it's technically part of Europe and Asia. And then what's stupid about
most
that.
Most of it is part of Asia.
Is Europe and Asia. Europe and Asia is technically one continent. They just divided because of the people.
Right. What? See, you can see that there's a lot of like skewing, there's a lot of Jerry Gentrying. Of all this information.
Last category, which is my favorite.
Yeah.
Native Hawaiian or other Pacific Islander.
Okay.
A person having origins in any of the original peoples of Hawaii, Guam, Samoa, or other Pacific Islands.
Those people that look kind of native, blackish, sort of. I'm playing naive for a point.
They got like, great tans.
Right. Why are we chopping this all up like this?
What is race? The data on race were derived from answers to the questions on race. So that's why individuals in the United States Census Bureau collects racial data in accordance to the guidelines provided by the
U.S. It's pure. It's that is some crack cocaine.
My thing is this. Office of Management and Budget.
That's crack cocaine.
Who are those people? Why did they classify it that way?
Right. And why are they official?
Oof, we're going to come back on that one next week. Thanks, guys, for hip hop grew up. Take it easy.